I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Foreign nationals from Europe, Asia, and the Middle East fled Lebanon on Thursday. The rush to leave comes as Israel's bombing of the capital, Beirut, intensified and governments worldwide urged their citizens to get out. Reuters correspondent Trevor Corral reports.
Foreign nationals in Lebanon have been scrambling to get out as Israel's campaign against the Iran-backed Hezbollah intensifies. One man told Reuters that flights are fully booked, with the earliest available in 10 days. Others turned to the sea, with hundreds arriving in Turkey via ferry after flights were canceled. The rush comes as Israel sent troops into southern Lebanon after 2 weeks of intense airstrikes, some hitting in the heart of Beirut after a year of clashes with Hezbollah. Governments worldwide have been urging their citizens to leave and drawing up plans to get them out. Israel on Thursday urged residents to evacuate more than 20 towns in southern Lebanon in the escalating conflict that has drawn in Iran and risks drawing in the United States.
Reuters correspondent Trevor Corral. U.S. President Joe Biden said Thursday he does not expect Israel to retaliate immediately for Tuesday's missile strikes by Iran. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
The ballistic missile barrage has raised concerns about a growing Mideast fight and America's role in defending Israel. Asked at the White House if the U.S. will allow Israel to fight back.
First of all, we don't allow Israel. We advise Israel, and there's nothing going to happen today. We'll talk about that later.
Israel has vowed a painful response to Tehran. Sagar Magani, Washington.
This is VOA News. U.S. President Joe Biden pledged support Thursday to those recovering from the devastation of Hurricane Helene as the death toll topped 200. AP correspondent Norman Hall reports.
President Joe Biden has been shown the deadly and devastating damage from Helene, first in Florida, where he visited with survivors and responders in Keaton Beach, and then in Georgia, where he visited a heavily damaged pecan orchard outside Valdosta.
I see you. I hear you. I agree with you, and I promise you we have your back.
Biden also said the response should be nonpartisan.
In moments like this, it's time to put politics aside.
And he urged Congress to be prepared to fund long-term recovery. I'm Norman Hall.
Tunisia holds presidential elections Sunday that seem to give incumbent Kais Saied another term in office, with his main rivals jailed, disqualified, or otherwise sidelined from the race. Lisa Bryant reports.
As president, Saied has rewritten the constitution, dissolved parliament, and ushered in new legislative bodies with limited powers. Mikael Ayari is senior Tunisia analyst for the International Crisis Group.
Is populist still popular? It's not true saying that everybody wants to get rid of him. But in middle classes and high classes of Lassab, he's not popular at all.
Voter participation was low on elections for each of Saied's changes. Just over 11% of Tunisians turned out for the legislative votes. Supporters praise Saied for cleaning up corruption and political gridlock. Critics say the president is taking the country back to pre-revolution days of fear and authoritarian rule and failing to deliver on jobs and the economy. They point to dozens of political rivals, journalists, and rights activists who have been targeted or jailed in recent years. Lisa Bryant, VOA News.
South Africa's Constitutional Court says it will hear a case next month brought by two opposition parties to revive impeachment proceedings against President Cyril Ramaphosa. The court made the announcement on Thursday. The two opposition parties want Ramaphosa impeached over a scandal involving more than $500,000 in cash that was hidden in a couch at his ranch and stolen in 2020. Ramaphosa avoided an impeachment vote in 2022 when his African National Congress Party used its majority in parliament to block a motion after an independent report raised questions over the money and recommended there be a full investigation. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, October 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Tanzania suspends the licenses of four media outlets for publishing what it calls prohibited content.
What the government is saying is for everyone in the industry, please let them be reminded that freedom comes with responsibility. And as far as the media sector is concerned, the government would wish to encourage all players to practice responsible journalism.
The managing editor says the company is engaging the government to lift the ban. We also hear from the Tanzania Editors Forum. Rights groups say the destruction and occupation of hospitals in Sudan could amount to war crimes. The International Organization for Migration updates on the fate of hundreds of migrants forced to disembark from their boats off the Djibouti coast. Tunisians cast their ballots this Sunday in presidential elections.
Critics say the president is taking the country back to pre-revolution days of fear and authoritarian rule and failing to deliver on jobs and the economy.
And African public health experts sound the alarm about the rising mpox cases around the continent. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's thoughts are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A spokesperson says the Tanzanian government is committed to free speech. However, Tobias Makoba says that right comes with responsibility. This after the Communication Regulatory Authority, a government-run body, suspended for 1 month the licenses of four of the company's print and digital publications, including the Citizen newspaper. The body accuses them of publishing what it calls prohibited content. The suspension comes as Tanzanians are expressing concerns about recent abductions and killings in the country. Government spokesperson Makoba says the government encourages media houses to practice responsible journalism.
I don't know what instance you're referring to, but if it is the same Tanzanian government that you're referring to, please don't forget it is the same government that did lift the ban on several newspapers 3 years ago and expressed its commitment to freedom of speech. But it is the same government that the president had expressed several times that the government, does not have monopoly of truth. And the media and the government are partners in development. We're not competing. We're not fighting. So please don't forget that. But it's the same Tanzania that this year was ranked 97th in the freedom of expression from 143rd in 2023. Look, what the government is saying is for everyone in the industry, please let them be reminded that freedom comes with responsibility. And as far as the media sector is concerned, the government would wish to encourage all players to practice responsible journalism.
Tobias Makoba is the Tanzanian government spokesperson. He was speaking with me from the capital, Dar es Salaam. The managing editor of Tanzania's newspaper, The Citizen, says his company, Mwananchi Communication Limited, is engaging the Tanzanian government for a way forward following the suspension of four of its print and digital publications. The Communications Regulatory Authority, a government-run regulatory body, suspended the licenses of the media house for 30 days for publishing what it calls prohibited content. Managing editor Mpoki Thompson spoke with me.
A lot of media houses have reached out, and my answer has been we issued a public statement yesterday, and I think my comments for now will be limited to what we issued as a company because we are still engaging with the government to see a clear way forward. However, with regards to any particular additional comments, I wouldn't be in a position to add any further context other than what we issued yesterday. As a company, but also as managing editor, there was a statement to our readers that we issued right after we pulled down the content from our digital platform.
What are you negotiating with the government?
We are trying to see if there could be grounds for us to reach a compromise on what has happened. We have been banned for 30 days with effect from yesterday, and we are serving that suspension, but we don't think that that should be the end of our engagement with the government. So, yeah, we are still trying to seek an audience and then just try to talk things out.
When you say you're negotiating, do you have any regret publishing what you published?
Again, that is, as I said, I wouldn't want to add any further context other than what we issued as a company, because this is not particularly me as Mbokki Thompson giving a response, but I'm also representing One Edge Communications Limited, and the position of the company is what we issued to the public. As I said, we are in engagement with the government as a media company. Yeah, that's where it stands at the moment.
Mbokki Thompson is the managing editor of Tanzania's The Citizen newspaper. He was speaking with me from the Tanzania capital, Dar es Salaam. The Tanzania Editors Forum says it is disappointed by the suspension of several online publications of Mwanichi Communications Limited. Neville Mina is the Secretary General of the Tanzania Editors Forum. He tells me the suspensions are a form of intimidation so that the media will curb its criticisms of the government ahead of local elections next month and the presidential election next year.
We are really concerned with what really happened to Mwananchi online platforms, where they have been suspended for 30 days. This is very unfortunate because we have a regulatory body which can suspend the operation of online platform of the media house without even give them an opportunity to be heard. We can't condemn someone without hearing on his or her side. So we say that's a bad regulation, the bad law, and we need to have a system where even if you accuse any media house to do any misconduct, but you can take the media house, whichever it is, is the regulatory body, you charge, you just file your grievances, and the media house to be heard. So we need a system, the natural justice, where everyone can be heard, and now the decision to be made by that regulatory body.
How would you describe the media landscape in Tanzania under President Samia Suluhu Hassan?
Under Samia Suluhu Hassan's leadership, you know, we started seeing some of these things that were changing, that things were no longer like they were during Magufuli's era. And we started seeing some of the law being amended. And the media crackdown was no longer out of the day. But recently, things have started changing. And I know what is happening, that we are approaching the, we'll have the local election this year, the next month, and we'll have a general election next year. So I can see it's a sign of intimidation that they are trying to crack down the media right now, so that when we come to elections, maybe the media will become less critic.
Neville Mina is the Secretary General for the Tanzania Editors Forum. He was speaking with me from the capital, Dar es Salaam. Tunisia holds presidential election on Sunday that seems certain to give incumbent Kais Saied another term in office, with his main rivals jailed, disqualified, or otherwise sidelined from the race. Is this the end of Tunisia's fragile democracy, or just another chapter on a rocky road since its 2011 revolution? Lisa Bryant reports.
Tunisians voting for change 5 years ago faced plenty of choices. More than two dozen candidates ran in the 2019 presidential race. Political newcomer Kais Saied won the runoff with 73% of the vote. He promised to root out corruption and give power back to the people. Things are very different this time around. Tunisia's election commission, whose members were appointed by Saied, approved just three candidates for Sunday's presidential vote. One was considered close to the president. Another is sentenced to a dozen years in jail. The third is Kais Saied. Mikael Ayari is senior Tunisia analyst for the International Crisis Group.
Is populist still popular? It's not true saying that everybody wants to get rid of him. But in middle classes and high classes of Lassab, he's not popular at all.
As president, Saied has rewritten the constitution, dissolved parliament, and ushered in new legislative bodies with limited powers. Voter participation was low on elections for each of Saied's changes. Just over 11% of Tunisians turned out for the legislative votes. These changes took place after Syed seized wide-reaching powers in 2021. Supporters praised Syed for cleaning up corruption and political gridlock. Some back his populist nationalist rhetoric and efforts to move beyond pro-Western alliances. Critics say the president is taking the country back to pre-revolution days of fear and authoritarian rule and failing to deliver on jobs and the economy. They point to dozens of political rivals, journalists, and rights activists who have been targeted or jailed in recent years. Kamel Jandoubi headed Tunisia's first independent electoral commission after the revolution.
Kais Saied's popularity has dropped considerably. That's why he's doing everything to lock up the political process. Because if he guarantees even the minimum of free expression, he very likely risks losing.
Most observers believe Syed will win a second term. His opponents promise to carry on their fight. Rita Dries is a senior member of the opposition El Nahda Party.
People are going to contest his legitimacy. A peaceful political resistance will gain ground, and things won't last long for Kais Saied.
Voter turnout on Sunday may determine how big a mandate or resistance Syed will have moving forward. Lisa Bryant, VOA News.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, October 4th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. The International Organization for Migration, the IOM, has given an update on the fate of hundreds of migrants who were forced to disembark their boats off the Djibouti coast by smugglers this week, resulting in the death of dozens. IOM Regional Director for East Horn and Southern Africa, Franz Celestine, told VOA's Horn of Africa service that two boats fully loaded with migrants carrying a total of 310 people were forced by the smugglers to disembark in the middle of the sea. He denied earlier reports suggesting that the boats had sunk. Celestine spoke to VOA Horn of Africa service reporter Jeline Jemenda.
A few days ago, we woke up to this horrible news of the incident related to two boats fully loaded with migrants. One had 100 migrants, the other one had 210 migrants. During the process, the smugglers forced the migrants to disembark in the middle of the sea. As a result, more than so far, 48 of them have perished, and 70 of them are unaccounted for. There is still search and rescue underway, trying to find them. But given the number of days that have passed and the nature of the sea, fear that they may also have been taken by the sea, they may have perished.
Did you identify the victim's nationality?
So it's a mix of Ethiopians and Somalis, but mostly Ethiopians who were coming back from Yemen on these two boats. The Ethiopian migrants and Somali migrants tend to use either Djibouti or Bosaso Barbera to cross the Gulf of Aden on their way to Yemen, with the final destination to be the Gulf country.
You said they are traveling from Yemen to Djibouti, and then what happened?
So they were coming back from Yemen to Djibouti, and on their way back, as they were approaching the Djibouti coast, the smugglers forced them to disembark in the middle of the sea.
Franz Celestine is the International Organization for Migration Regional Director for East Horn and Southern Africa. He spoke with VOA Horn of Africa service reporter Jeline Gemenda. Most hospitals in the Khartoum area of Sudan have been destroyed or evacuated as fighting in the capital continues. VOA gained rare access to a hospital still operating in the area and another got hit by the fighting, as rights groups say those responsible for the devastation should be held accountable for war crimes. Henry Wilkins reports.
Hamida Abdel Manim Abdel Rahim was injured in crossfire in Sudan's Khartoum area in early September.
The bullets were all over my body, my hands, my stomach, and my legs. I lost a lot of blood. Both my legs got shot. Both of them are broken. Also, one toe was amputated on this foot, and two toes were amputated on the other foot.
She is a patient at the Al Naw Hospital, one of only a handful of hospitals still operating in Khartoum, a capital city ripped apart in Sudan's civil war. The World Health Organization says only 16% of healthcare facilities were operating in the capital region as of July, citing Khartoum's health authority. Human rights lawyers say that both sides in the conflict, the Sudanese Armed Forces, or SAF, and the Paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, are responsible for the destruction of hospitals. Christian DeVos, an adjunct professor at the City University of New York School of Law, has been observing the situation in Sudan.
The hospitals have been subject to indiscriminate shelling. Reasonable basis to conclude that that has been perpetrated both by RSF forces as well as SAF forces.
On a recent trip to Omdurman across the River Nile from Khartoum, VOA visited the so-called Chinese hospital, which has been gutted since the war started.
This hospital is under the control of the Sudanese military. They say they took back control from the paramilitary rapid support forces in February of this year.
It's not clear which side is responsible for the destruction of the hospital. The SAF told VOA that security personnel stationed in the hospital were police and volunteers there to deter thieves. Rights groups say military use of hospitals is banned under international law. The SAF are not the main culprits for illegal occupation of hospitals, however, says Letitia Bader of Human Rights Watch.
In terms of the occupation of hospitals, this has been very much more on the RSF side.
She said it's indicative of the disregard shown for hospitals in Sudan, which could amount to war crimes. The RSF told VOA in a statement, the rapid support forces have not occupied or destroyed any hospitals. These accusations are completely untrue and blamed the SAF for violations. Henry Wilkins, VOA News, Omdurman, Sudan.
As cases of mpox rise across Africa, public health experts are sounding the alarm, saying more needs to be done to contain the viral outbreak. At the same time, there is a new outbreak of Marburg virus. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Ruben Tama reports.
Speaking during an online news briefing Thursday, African health experts said the continent is battling two major outbreaks, mpox and Marburg. Sabine Sansimana is Rwanda's Minister of Health.
As of today, we've confirmed 36 cases of Marburg. And unfortunately, we've lost 11 people. More than 8% of these cases are healthcare providers. The healthcare workers, most of the time, it's unfortunate, but it's a reality that they are the first to be affected by such diseases because they face sick people from different places, different backgrounds.
Rwanda last month confirmed its first cases of Marburg disease, a viral hemorrhagic fever that can be deadly. On Thursday, the health ministry confirmed it is working with the World Health Organization and pharmaceutical companies to begin clinical tests of new vaccines to fight Marburg. Meanwhile, cases of mpox continue to rise across the African continent. Jean Kaseya is the Director General of the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the Africa CDC.
Unfortunately, we have a new country that declared mpox this week. This is Ghana. That brings a total of 16 African member states affected. If we compare the same period, 2023 and 2024, there is an increase in terms of cases of 201%. It means the outbreak is still not controlled.
The Africa CDC is the public health agency of the African Union, and it supports countries in their efforts to strengthen health systems and improve surveillance and emergency response. The African region is experiencing an unprecedented increase in mpox cases, with more countries previously unaffected by the disease reporting cases. But there are concerns about getting accurate case counts. the United States is among the major donors that have committed billions of dollars to support the global response to the mpox outbreak. Again, Jean Kaseya.
In terms of funding, last week was a successful week. We managed to raise around $1.1 billion. Out of that, $500 came from the U.S., $129 came from pandemic fund.
In August, the World Health Organization declared a public health emergency of international concern because of the surge of mpox cases. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport in Senegal, where the national football team coach, Aliou Cissé, who led the team to an African Cup of Nations title and the past two World Cup tournaments, will no longer lead the Teranga Lions, following what the National Soccer Federation said was a government request not to renew his contract. Cissé was nearing 10 years in charge of the Teranga Lions that included reaching two AFCON finals, winning the title in 2022 and the round of 16 at the 2022 World Cup. The former Paris Saint-Germain defender had been due to hold a news conference on Friday to announce a squad for the upcoming qualifying games for the 2025 Africa Cup of Nations. Staying with football news, Cameroon Football Federation President Samuel Eto'o has been banned from attending the national team's matches for 6 months after violating FIFA's disciplinary regulations. Football's governing body, FIFA, said in a statement that a sanction was imposed in connection with the FIFA Under-20 Women's World Cup round of 16 March between Brazil and Cameroon, played in Bogota, Colombia on the 11th of September 2024. Details regarding the incidents were not disclosed by FIFA disciplinary committee. The statement said Eto'o was deemed guilty of offensive behavior and violations of the principles of fair play and misconduct involving officials. And now to basketball, where Dikembe Mutombo, a basketball Hall of Famer born in the Democratic Republic of Congo, who was one of the best defensive players in NBA history and a longtime global ambassador for the game, died on Monday after a battle with brain cancer. He was aged 58. Toronto Raptors president Masai Ujiri was one of the many people in basketball to speak about the tragic loss of a basketball star.
Yeah, what Dikembe Mutombo, Hakeem Olajuwon, Manute Bol did for us on the continent is something you cannot imagine. Yeah, nobody did it like those three in setting the pace for us. Now both of them are, Manute Bol and Dikembe Mutombo, are gone. We remember them with great pride. We talk about Dikembe Mutombo with great pride. There's nobody like that guy. Nobody, trust me.
And now to boxing, where the Namibia National Boxing Championships got underway on Thursday in Grootfontein and is expected to run up until Saturday. Benjamin Rebang, president of the Namibia Boxing Federation, says over 160 amateur boxers, including 20 female boxers, will be competing for gold medals and a chance to shine on the national stage.
If you don't have this type of events, you won't know who are the best boxers that you have.
That's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, October 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.
States Agency for International Development reveals that malnutrition remains a significant challenge in Nigeria, with severe acute malnutrition impacting 3.6 million children. This week on Our Voices, we'll talk with the talented Nigerian Nollywood actress Chioma Chukwuka Apota, who is the USAID Goodwill Ambassador for Nutrition. Join the conversation on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.